Go Cubs, go indeed. It's 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, and guess what? It is time for the pregame for Game 1 of the NLDS Series. True Blue Playoff Plus, that's what we're calling it, from Wintrust, home of Cubs checking. Very excited to talk about this game, which is going to be at Wrigley Field tonight, starting at 8:15. In studio with me, Mark Carmen and Adam Hoag from WGN Radio Sports. Good to see you guys. Thanks for being here.
I'm having a meltdown. Let's go. I'm full meltdown right now. It's 1 hour away, 59 minutes, if the TV time is right. I don't exactly know what you're supposed to feel like 59 minutes away to ending a 108-year curse and starting a three-peat.
Well, it's not going to happen tonight, Carm.
That's true.
You have to win 11 games.
Tonight is important. Tonight is very important. If they don't win tonight, it's not over. I get all that, but tonight is important. And come on, John Lester. This is the moment, right? This is your 150, whatever he got paid, $155 million moment. You got to be there, John Lester, and I be the ball. Come on,
baby. Well, we'll talk about both the lineups tonight, what to expect from the Cubs, but also to expect from the San Francisco Giants and Johnny Cueto. Sam Panionovich is going to join us from the stadium as well as in the area in Wrigleyville. So we'll talk all about that. But let's start with just a quick analysis. I mean, obviously the Chicago Cubs, the number one team, the number one seed, the best record in baseball. You've seen how it's gone for the AL teams, Boston and Texas, not having a great run at it right now. Mm-hmm. But talk about the Cubs, what they need to do to jump out early and to have success in this series.
Well, I mean, that's one thing you love about them, right? Right when the game goes, pretty much all season long, they start grinding at bats. They jump you early. Dexter Fowler has been a huge igniter for this team. So that's going to be an enormous key that Fowler has a big series. And then, I mean, the way Maddon's played it, a lot of guys would bat Chris Bryant 3, 4, 5. I mean, he's got him in that two hole, and he's got playing left field tonight, Ben Zobrist sitting fourth. So kind of an unconventional, we're going to put our contact guy, somebody who takes a lot of pitches in the four hole. So they've jumped a lot of teams early, and, you know, playoff baseball going up against the best pitching gets a little more challenging, but you would hope that would be the case.
But I think that's important because, look, we've already seen the Blue Jays go win two games against the Rangers because they get the benefit. It's not a benefit that you have to play that extra game, but if you win that extra game, that one game playoff, in the wild card spot, I think it does give you momentum and kind of it takes the nerves right out of it. Okay, the Giants already played their big game the other night. They're not dealing with what the Cubs are dealing with tonight in terms of all that pressure and the excitement of game one.
Does it hurt them that they took a night off or a week off to get ready for this?
I mean, I think it's interesting, right?
I don't think it helps.
Neither do I, exactly. I think what's good that they're resting, I think long term it helps them, but in a short series coming out, you do wonder if they're going to be rusty. Kerry Wood was on the station today talking about that. Ryan Dempster was on the station earlier this week talking about that. Yeah, so, I mean, I think it's Justin, I think bringing that up is real fair. I mean, you've had a long layoff, and they haven't been playing meaningful games for almost 3 weeks now.
All right. Well, let's go out to Wrigley Field right now and bring in Sam Panionovich, who is there. Sam, thanks for joining us. The excitement, you can feel it's a playoff game in Chicago.
Oh, yeah. They're blasting Ain't No Stopping Us Now by McMurray and Whitehead. It's a party on the north side.
That thing's going all night, Sam Panionovich, who's, by the way, harassing me on Twitter and saying that I'm like this biased guy on the radar. I'd like to just get it established right now. I am extremely biased.
There's nothing wrong with that right now.
Panionovich just wants to troll me.
Sam,
I get it.
How are things at this at Wrigley Field? I mean, do you feel that the Cubs, obviously the playoff atmosphere, the feeling is there, but how's the team sort of dealing with this pressure?
I don't think pressure is really a problem this year. You know, I think they really went through a lot of that last year. I think we've chronicled that quite a bit throughout the season, that last year was the first taste. You know, it was the toe in the water. This year, they expect to win. And Jake Arrieta said last week, you know, it doesn't matter who we play, whether it's the Giants or the Mets. Well, it is Chicago, San Francisco. It'll be John Lester and Johnny Cueto. And, you know, these fans have been bundled into this stadium. You know, the gates opened about 6:30, but the line started about 3. And I talked to the owner of Murphy's. She said they started drinking at 10 o'clock this morning. So this place has been a firecracker all day long. Not to mention, you can tell it's a Cub playoff game when John Cusack's here and he pulls his Cub hat out of the closet.
Right. It doesn't matter which side is in the playoffs, he's there. But all right, Sam, so a question I have is just about the concept of home field advantage when you get to the playoffs like this. When it's Wrigley Field, is there a distinct advantage, guys, to playing at Wrigley Field if you're the Cubs because of the crowd, because everything that's happening and that excitement around it?
It's a good
you
question.
You always like to be at home. I mean, there's no doubt about it. The one question that I have, though, is I think this Cubs offense is better suited for a warm weather city. I mean, if we're being perfectly honest, I mean, San Francisco, the ball jumps out of there. it's a lot warmer. Now, this Cubs offense, it kind of froze last winter. Well, I guess October is fall. But, I mean, the bats went cold. And, I mean, it's about 60 degrees here right now. Probably going to be around, you know, 55 at game time. So, you know, you're going to have to put the ball in play. I mean, this is an offense that last year struck out so much. They've gotten better this year. But, I mean, of course, you'd much rather have that extra game at home. You know, it's game five in the AL-NLDS, and then in the CS is the World Series, it's game seven. So you want to be at home. You want to have the fans on your side, and I promise you this place is going to be booming. They're handing out W towels, the blue towels, as I speak. So, you know, you'd always want to play at home, no doubt about it.
Any celebrity sightings yet, Sam?
I mentioned John Cusack. I saw Mike Ditka here.
Oh, God.
Wayne Wade is here. Let's see.
Is Ditka throwing out the first pitch?
He's saying play.
I don't know that yet. I think you're keeping that a secret.
He's saying play ball.
Might be Harry Carey. He might be throwing it out. No, I have no idea who's throwing it out.
No, Billy Williams has the first pitch. Dick is going to say play ball, and then he's going to talk about how Hillary Clinton is
wrong for this country.
Why do we need Mike Ditka in the stadium tonight? No disrespect to 1985, but come on. Better, okay.
There you go. Well, right. It's a national stage. You got to bring out your national Chicagoans. All right, Sammy, I'm going to let you go. You're breaking up. We'll talk to you soon. We'll talk to you back here at the station. Sam Panionovich at Wrigley Field. It is True Blue Playoff Plus from Wintrust Home of Cubs Checking. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll have more pregame before tonight's game against the San Francisco Giants at Wrigley Field. Stay with us.
Fans all over the world.
Come on.
Cub fans. This is next year. It's here. Fans all over the world.
Come on.
Cubs fans. This is next year. It's
you know Pete Zimmerman's doing work tonight as he's bringing in some great tracks for us here in our pregame tonight. A big game tonight. Wow. The first game of the National League Divisional Series. It is True Blue Playoff Plus in studio with me right now, Adam Hogue, Mark Carmen. Let's talk quickly before we go to the news, get an update from Martyr about tonight's lineup. Obviously, the Giants have been here before. Bruce Bochy has unbelievable line. I mean, has he ever lost an NLDS in his career? But let's talk about the players on the field. Johnny Cueto doesn't get the recognition that a Madison Bumgarner gets, but this guy has been lights out. 18-5, I think it is. He's not even mentioned really in the Cy Young chase, but he is formidable, and the Cubs don't have a lot of experience against him.
I mean, he's got the same basically year that John Lester has, right? And John Lester is probably going to win the Cy Young award. He's got an ERA under 3. You mentioned the record, 18-5. 198 strikeouts, a whip, if you want to go all baseball-y, 1.09. That's walks and hits per inning for those learning.
Second on the team in WAR behind Bumgarner.
I mean, this is a monster. And the last time, so the Cubs faced him September 4th at home, and they won the game 3-2, but they didn't exactly beat Johnny Cueto. 7 innings, 5 hits, 1 run, and it was earned. He walked 1, struck out 5. I mean, this guy's a monster.
And the Cubs know him because he did play, he was a pitcher for a long time with the Cincinnati Reds in the division, but this is a young team, and I don't think they've seen Johnny Cueto like they did when he was in Cincinnati.
Because he hasn't been there for 2 years, so it's really only the Anthony Rizzos and guys like Miguel Montero or Jason Hayward, who faced him a lot before he got to the Cubs, that has some experience. Dexter Fowler has some experience, too. But, I mean, you're talking about – and, by the way, Anthony Rizzo, only 3-for-25 against Johnny Cueto in his career. That's a large enough sample size to take something away from that. You start talking about Chris Bryant. He's 3-for-5. That's good, but it's way too small of a sample size, especially going to the playoff, different animal. Same thing with Addison Russell, 3-for-6 against Johnny Cueto in his career. But, again, small sample size.
All right.
Anxiety is just building is what's going on right now.
You got to bring it in. See, Justin, my job for the next I think it's going to be a month because I'm Mr. Optimistic. You're, this guy's not. My job for the next month is basically just to pump him up, keep him level.
Motivation.
Yes. It's going to be okay. I'm going to say that a lot.
Temper expectations.
I know we have news coming up, but it was interesting what Kerry Wood said on Row today. I asked him about like the attitude of the fans and the positivity in the stadium and whether or not it matters. I mean, he was flat out, yes, it does. Don't be a don't be a mope when things go wrong.
Yeah.
If you give up on the team feels it.
Oh,
so if
man.
You're going tonight and they do get down early, you keep on that positive flow. Cub fan.
Mark Garman, Adam Hogue in studio with me. True Blue Playoff Plus from Wintrust, home of Cubs Checking. We'll take a break. We'll get an update from Rob Martyr, and we will continue sizing up tonight's game against the Giants at Wrigley Field. Stay with us. All right, more pregame to come. Rob Martire, you excited?
Are you kidding me? I've got a Cubs shirt on, man.
Dude, that's crazy.
That's how excited
that's
I am.
That's exciting. Man, I got to say, this is a big moment.
Traitor.
Yeah. Hey, man. There's plenty of room, I was told, on the bandwagon, and I'm on it.
I'm proud of you, Rob.
I'm on it. Hey, look, I said I wanted to be here doing this when they win this thing.
Yeah, right.
There's absolutely.
That's very powerful.
I'm going to Chicago. I'm going to my home and to the friendly confines where the boys of summer roam. We'll all cheer on our Cubs. Let's hear it for our side. We're all diehard believers. It's a matter of pride. It's a matter of
it's
pride.
It's a matter of
damn
pride.
Damn right.
There you go. True Blue Playoff Plus here on 720 WGN, presented by Wintrust, home of Cubs checking. I'm Justin Kaufman. Adam Hoge, Mark Carmen in studio. It's pregame for tonight's game one of the NLDS.
I'm getting trolled by the voice of the Houston Astros, who I used to work with in Kansas City. You nervous? And I just wrote, nope, three-peat, and he comes back with Michael Jordan walking through that door. I'm putting three-peats out there on my text line. I don't know what you guys are doing.
Three-peat? Like, as in the three World Series in a row?
Yeah, why not?
Why don't we just start with sweeping the Giants?
How about we start with a win tonight?
Which should happen right. With Connor Gillespie in the Giants lineup.
Great transition. All right, the San Francisco Giants offense. We talked about Johnny Cueto being a difficult pull for the Cubs, but let's talk about the Giants offense. This is, I mean, you go down this lineup and you could play a game of is this a real MLB player or am I faking the name? Because some of these guys I've never heard of.
Right. How about that? Like you as we were just talking in the break, you're a religious player of fantasy baseball.
Champion.
I consider myself a huge baseball guy. Adam, the same. Gorky Hernandez is leading off for you tonight as your right-handed hitter because John Lester's on the mound. You have Kelby Tomlinson playing second and Connor Gillespie.
Kelby Tomlinson's not real.
Kelby Thompson might not be real.
That's not a real person.
Kelby Tomlinson.
Why are, I mean.
That guy's going to bomb tonight, right?
Let me ask you this. I mean, you guys are baseball guys. I mean, does the matchups matter at this point when you get into the playoffs, when you get into a five-game series like this, when you're going lefty-righty and trying to find the right percentages that you will play a guy like Kelby Tomlinson who has not seen too many at-bats probably against John Lester?
52 games for Kelby Tomlinson this year, 106 at-bats at .292 for the record. Listen, both a lot of Cubs players were asked yesterday in the clubhouse, hey, how important is the manager in this series? Like the old baseball, that's like, what's the manager worth? And everybody, like David Ross looked at him, extremely important. Jake Arrieta, extremely important. So how these guys match up and what Joe Maddon does, and he talked about how Bruce Bochy is a Cowboy. I mean, that's a huge part of the series. I think it's one of the reasons why you can feel confident in the Cubby right now is at least you have Maddon at the helm, right? You know he's not going to blow it.
Right, because Bochy has obviously already proven himself and time again.
Bochy's great.
That they're, you know, four World Series, three World Series championships. They are facing one of the best managers, and not just one of the best managers in the game, but a guy who's proven himself in the playoffs here. And you know me, Carm, we have these discussions all the time. I'm a guy who thinks the manager does matter. I think it matters a lot. I think because we talk about the pressure, and okay, Sam Panayanovic out of the ballpark told us, he doesn't think they're feeling pressure right now. You lose game one, though, guess what? You're feeling a lot of pressure, and that's where the manager, even off the field, right. Forget all the decisions Joe Maddon's going to have to make in-game, but off the field, having a guy like Joe Maddon, calm, cool, collected, is going to be huge.
Well, and Lester said it in the pregame yesterday, of course you feel a lot different on the mound for game one in October than you're going to feel on a start in May. I mean, that's the reality. But here's a guy who's been nails in the playoffs, and I mean, his advice to himself and to, I guess, to anyone else is like, look, you fastball down and away works in October like it does in May, but you got to throw it. You can't, like, you know, it's got to be with a purpose.
It's a lot of mental agility. You can't just like phone one pitch in the playoffs.
Right. I mean,
we saw it in the wild card. I mean, that Mets Giants game went down to the wire, and it wasn't until a closer kind of phoned it in. All right. So let me ask you guys this. I mean, the Chicago Cubs, obviously, when we talk about the offense, a lot of firepower. This team is just, I mean, it reminds me, I was telling Pete earlier, it kind of reminds me of the old 2000s New York Yankees, the way that they go seven or eight deep with these hitters. But it's also about matchups because we don't see Jorge Soler tonight. We don't see Wilson Contreras tonight. A lot of guys that have had pretty great seasons and can change the game with one swing of the bat are not in the lineup.
Well, it's a great point bringing up Soler, too, because, last year the guy didn't make it out. I mean, and not only did he not make it out, he was hitting bombs. And same thing with Schwarber, by the way, who is not going to be on the playoff roster, hasn't played all year, right? So who's going to step into that void? And you know, the other thing, Justin, I mean, right, this is who you're starting, but as the game goes along, how does he manipulate who's coming in, when's he pinch hitting for Lester, who's taking that at bat, what is he going to play left and you're moving Zobrist and taking, I mean, it's a million different decisions.
Yeah. Let's just talk, we just named two guys, maybe three on the Giants that no one's ever heard of, and here the Cubs are, and they have Wilson Contreras and Jorge Soler not even in the lineup tonight. I mean, which clearly one of these teams is so much better than the other when it comes to just the offensive firepower. I think the you know, with Bumgarner and Cueto going, that's a tough matchup there. But from top to bottom offensively, this Cubs team should take care of the Giants. Come on.
Let me ask you this, too. You know, on the other side of the ball, on the defense, the Cubs have an historical season, which is more impressive that their starting left fielder was injured early, Kyle Schwarber. But more importantly, they're putting third basemen and catchers and, you know, guys, pitchers and guys that never played the positions and left field, right field. I mean, you've seen so much. Ben Zobrist tonight is going to start in left field. I mean, there's something about the Cubs being so multi-talented on the defensive side to be able to play positions that are not their natural positions.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that we're going to see Travis Wood in left field at any point in the series like we did during the year, but who knows, man? I mean, you have one of these. I mean, this is a type of series where you could have a 1-1 game going into the 16th, right? I mean, that's possible. So what goes on in that scenario? Again, that's where you feel comfortable about Maddon. And he has an opportunity, too. I mean, let's just say for argument's sake that, like, you know, Javi Baez goes 4-for-4 tonight. Well, then he's obviously in the lineup. But what happens if he has an 0-for-4? Then, and how much rope do you give these guys? How much rope do you give Jason Hayward, who's had a generally awful year at the plate? People want to be nice to him because he's a good defender. But you know what? If you're not
paid a lot of money for him, right?
And if you're not hitting in or game three, your lineup against a lefty in Madison Bumgarner, is he really in the lineup? If he's, let's just say for argument's sake, he's 0-for-8 going into the game. I don't think he is. But you know, who knows what Maddon will do?
Well, this is the idea. I mean, you got Jason Hayward and John Lackey and some of the players you got in free agency over last winter was for this moment, for the moment in the playoffs.
Yeah, the depth should be better. You have guys with playoff experience, and basically you don't want to run out of gas like I think the Cubs did in that series against the Mets a year ago. And getting back to the defense, you know, it was just one game, but after the Bears played the Texans a few weeks ago in Houston, a few of us went over to Minute Maid Park and watched the Cubs play the Astros that night because they just happened to be in town. And I got to say, the defensive performance just in that one game, I mean, it was totally on display, all nine positions. Arrieta was on the mound, but Chris Bryant was making ridiculous plays. And there's a guy who wasn't the knock, the defense on that kid, and he's come up and he's really developed as a defensive player. The metrics show, the defensive metrics show, the Cubs are far and away the best team in Major League Baseball in terms of runs prevented.
Possibly in history.
Yeah. It's crazy. that's another advantage I think they have in the playoffs.
Giants are a good defensive team, too, though. They pick up the ball. They're not going to gift you runs. I mean, you're going to have to beat this team. And I've heard a couple people say, like, the Giants are sort of like the Blackhawks of baseball, where, you know, three championships in 5 years, and they get in, and then anything's possible.
Right,
you know, even when the Hawks, I mean, if we're making that comparison, even when the Blackhawks are not at their full Blackhawk power, they still will give you an incredible series. So, you know, you got two games at home, and then you got Bumgarner in game three.
Mark Carmen, Adam Hogan, studio. you're listening to True Blue Playoff Plus, the pregame tonight, brought to you by Wintrust, home of Cubs checking. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and give you more here on 720 WGN.
Let's start with Anthony Rizzo. He won't let any foul balls go. Great smile onto Bryant, his best bro.
Pete Zimmerman bringing the heat. A game one. He went deep. Some deep cuts from Pete Zimmerman. It's pregame here on 720 WGN. True Blue Playoff Plus from Wintrust. Home of Cubs checking. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio, Adam Hoge, Mark Carmen. We're talking about the game, which is getting close. The first pitch coming up at 8:15 is what we're seeing. The obviously this is an exciting moment for Chicago Cubs fans. I mean, but there really has been this sort of conflict today between the optimism and the pessimism. Where are we as a city when it comes to the temperament of the fan?
It's really an interesting question because I talk to different people who have tickets. Well, you know, I think I'm going to go to Game 3 of the World Series and Game 5. I'm going to give 4 to my family. It's like, are you really saying that right now? Because Cub fans have never said that before. So there's some of that going on. And then you also have a lot of terror, too, right? So
I feel like the terror is just starting right now. Like, it's Cubs fans have been so optimistic all year. They've known for months that this was going to happen, that there was going to be a playoff game tonight. And now that it's here, I feel like people like you, Carm, are just losing your mind.
Well, it's also like, at least for me, as always worried that the other shoe is going to drop with the Cubs. I mean, I can go back to 0-3. They're up with 5 outs to go, and I'm walking from the right field corner after selling a ton of old styles to the left field corner, and like they were about to go to the World Series, and it just felt off to me. Like, is this supposed to be what it feels like? Like, what does it feel like when they actually do it, right? I mean, beating the Cardinals last year, I didn't even know how to feel then. I just had like a screaming moment in the green room over there. You were with me. Like, how did
I think
that
I caught it on, you know, like, how on
did,
video.
How did that happen? Great. So it's just I mean I don't know what is this right now? I mean, it's a whole nother reality.
Well, let me
right?
ask you. I mean, as a Cubs fan, as a diehard, as a guy who's been at the park, has been part of the fabric of Wrigleyville, is this the team that we start seeing as a perennial playoff team, regardless if they win the World Series this year? A team that you start to lose that anxiety because of the fact that they become like everybody else, like the LA Dodgers or you know the Boston Red Sox now that are there all the time and you don't have to worry about that?
I mean, I think that Theo and Jed, I think that's their message, right? They keep on saying stuff. We don't see this as, you know, the big moment. We see this more as a beginning. So I think that's kind of their way to mitigate, hey.
Well, the organization's backing that up too, Carm. I mean, they just extend Theo through 2021. A lot of the player contracts are up 2021. So that's, I mean, we're really talking about a 5-year window that has been built not only by Theo, but also above him to lock in the management, lock right. in the front office, and really say, hey, look, this is a 5-year window. And then you start looking at guys like Bryant who still need to eventually be extended, and you say, okay, are we going to we're gonna extend that window? But there's a lot of things they can do.
And they'll pay him.
This team, I mean, has been so tremendously dominant all season, but you're definitely graded and you're definitely judged by what you do in the postseason. Who are going to be the players that step up and be the heroes of Cub fandom forever? That I mean, are we going to see walk-offs from the Anthony Rizzo? What's it going to take for someone to rise to that sort of I guess Ryan Sandberg, you know, Ernie Banks kind of level?
I mean, the biggest area that I'm looking for a hero is who's going to get the ball to Aroldis Chapman when whenever starter goes out. I mean, Hector Rondon on August 2nd, he had an ERA of 1.7. He finished the year at 3.53. He was brutal after he got hurt coming back. His ERA in September was 8.53. Now, ERA can be inflated by a couple of bad outings, but his last four outings, Strope, who was your eighth inning guy and was your closer before you got Chapman, he gave up one run, one hit. Oh, I'm going to say that's Strope. He gave up 3 hits in all 3 outings where he pitched an actual inning, 3 runs once, 2 runs twice. Wow. The only outing that was scoreless, he faced one batter.
And they were hoping he was going to be the setup guy after he was replaced by Chapman, but he hasn't really done well in that role.
Right. I mean, his arm was fatigued and he ended up on the DL and hasn't been the same.
Is this the kind of thing? I mean, it happened with the White Sox in 05 with Bobby Jenks where he was kind of like an untested rookie who came in and played well. I mean, is this an opening for a Carl Edwards Jr., for somebody like that who can come in and shut it down with a young arm?
It's possible. I mean,
I think he gets the shot.
Bobby was really hot, though, coming down the stretch, too. I mean, that guy had really built the momentum going into the playoffs. It wasn't just like, oh, here he is. Now, the Sox did go through 3 closers in that season, but he became the guy late in the regular season, so he kind of built to that moment. I hate to simplify it down to one starting pitcher. I think Jake Arrieta needs to be Jake Arrieta in the playoffs if the Cubs are going to win the World Series. We see guys, we've seen it in the past, like Bumgarner. Now, he's done some freakish stuff carrying the Giants the way he did a couple years ago. But that's what you need. You need one of your guys, your aces, to really put it that you can lean on in any given moment, even if he has to come out of the pen at some point. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's game five. Maybe he pitches game three. For some reason, this goes to game five in this series, and they need Arrieta to come back and get an inning in the eighth inning. Maybe he's the guy that gets you to Chapman in the ninth. I mean, that's what I think they need from him, because when he lost it last year and he didn't have that same velocity and fatigue started to set in, that's where the Cubs kind of got derailed in the NLCS.
And I think he's irritated, by the way, that he's in that three spot. Like, are you kidding me? I was the Cy Young Award winner last year. You're going to start Kyle Hendricks above me and John Lester. And so I think there's that. And one other comment, and then I'll be quiet and just mellow out here. I mean, John Lester is starting game one, and if there's a game five, he's starting game five.
Right.
So this series, if you're going to point at one guy who really it's on his shoulder more than anyone else, I mean, that's your game one starter, that's your game five starter. John Lester's got to be big.
Wow. The question marks, you know, as we look into it, Kyle Hendricks, obviously a tremendous year, may even be the Cy Young, but not a seasoned vet when it comes to playoff time. Do we worry about him? Not unlike what we worried about Jake Arrieta last year. I mean, do you see him as a lock?
One thing about Kyle Hendricks, he's such a smart, level-headed guy that I don't think it'll completely freak him out. I think he'll just follow his routine and do it. Also, a weird baseball stat, because baseball is weird. First-time pitchers in the postseason, they actually pitch better in their first start because there's maybe less expectations. Mm-hmm. So it actually plays out that somebody with less experience in the postseason that is getting a start pitches better for whatever reason.
The other guy that had a tremendous season, and we'd like to see him have a great playoff series, is shortstop Addison Russell. His RBI production is off the charts for a shortstop. Has to have a great series for the Cubs to be able to move on.
Yeah, I just love the blend of seasoned veterans, guys like Dexter Fowler leading off, and then you got Rizzo in the three. Well, what do you have at the two? You have Chris Bryant, who should be poised to really explode here in the playoffs. You have Ben Zobrist batting fourth tonight, who's a guy who with a World Series
and another guy you brought in for this moment.
Exactly. And then right behind him, you have Addison Russell, who you just mentioned, a young kid that needs to perform. Then you go to Jason Hayward, veteran. Hey, now, there's been plenty of criticism towards Jason Hayward, but he can make up for all of that with a strong playoff here. And then you go back to Javi Baez in the seventh hole, another kid who can really step up. So this is really set up for either dominance or, I hate to say it, but it all can fall apart too.
Last words, what do you expect from tonight, especially when we get late in the game?
I expect the Cubs to work the count, and I expect that Johnny Cueto will get his pitch count up and hopefully get him out of there at least by the seventh. So I'll be paying close attention to that. I'm also expecting Chris Bryant to have a big night. He's got the best pedigree, even though it's a small one, against Cueto. I think he's in a great place. Last year his playoff was not great, and I expect that Bryant is going to be on a whole another level, a lot more confident coming in. He seems in a great place.
All right, Mark Carmen, Adam Hoge. Adam Hoge will be back with the postgame at 11 o'clock tonight. True Blue Playoff Plus from Wintrust, home of Cubs checking. Check it out here at 720 WGN. Guys, good luck. I'm telling you right now, Walter, the only place to watch the game tomorrow night is MLB Network. Do you have it?
I don't know. I'll check when I get home, but I doubt it.
It's a different day. It's a different day. They're not showing the game on Fox. They're showing it on an MLB Network. And it's something that we've been talking about. We've been annoyed, which is actually a great transition here on 720 WGN Chicago to introduce my guest tonight for the week that was. We're reloading this week's news with two familiar voices and familiar faces here to Chicago. Reunited, it's got to feel good. Walter Jacobson.
Feels great.
And Robin Robinson. Great to see you guys. Thanks for being here.
Here we are, the dynamic duo, right?
Yeah, we haven't had a hello, not to mention a kiss and a hug, and God knows how long. I miss you so much. It is so good to be sitting next to you again, even though you now are a public official, and it's my responsibility to dig at you.
I am not a public official as an appointed or elected. I am simply a civil servant, and I work for you, Walter.
That's Oh,
she's good.
How about
well,
that?
Then tell me, what do you think?
Oh, here we go. Wait, I'm sorry. This is Justin's show. You know,
I will gladly defer to Walter Jacobson.
First question he asked me 30 years ago: how old are you? And I thought, you know, I'm sure there's a law against you asking me that, of course, because I was trying to pretend to be older than I was.
So, how old are you by now?
Old. I'm old. Okay, I got my AARP
Always
card. I asked for my discounts.
But don't forget, you're a lot younger than me. And if I'm not afraid to tell my age, you shouldn't be afraid to tell me.
I didn't say anything about fear. I just don't want the younger people to feel bad.
Oh, well, okay. That's good.
How about that? Well, I don't want to suffer from adultism.
You both are ageless and timeless in our minds here in Chicago. You have obviously longtime anchors at Fox News here in Chicago. I mean, how long
Fox
were you guys?
Chicago.
Fox Chicago. How long were you guys together on the desk?
Oh, who
Do you remember that?
You start five, counting things?
Maybe 5 years?
Oh, no. It was longer than that.
Longer
I know time
that.
Flies when you're having fun. It seems like eight
oh,
or
boy.
Eight years
My
or something
memory is
like
not
that.
Too good.
I was there for a while. And I
well,
had
I know
different...
I got there in 1993.
And I got there in 1986 and left in 2014.
You know, but we were also on the news together at CBS.
We were.
For a while.
Well, we were not exactly together. I was the consumer reporter, and he was the big anchor man.
No, we were a really pretty good team because Robin is so quick and so smart.
And he's so and curious so, and will ask you anything.
Yeah.
Because well, he really wants to know.
Well, good. Oh, then, no. You know, I think you guys are a perfect pair for us to reload this week's news. We do this every Friday on the download here on 720 WGN. So it's an honor and a privilege to have both of you in studio to talk about a huge week when it comes to news. Obviously, we're going to talk tonight about the biggest story, the winners, the losers, the overreported and underreported stories, what story took you down the rabbit hole, and also which story will be remembered in 55 years, 10 years, 50 years, 500 years from now. We'll get to all those topics. Let's start with the biggest story of the week. What do you got for biggest story of the week, Walter?
I don't think there can possibly be a story bigger or as big as the Cubs. I mean, there's no story that even comes close to that size, even what Donald Trump got hit for this afternoon, which was really big. In fact, I was thinking Cubs when I knew we were going to talk about this all day today and a little bit yesterday, and I was all set to come in here and talk only about the Cubs. But what happened to Trump this afternoon is just mind-blowing. I think that man may be out of it, really gone.
I mean, obviously, you know, having a piece of audio come out that is damaging, sort of what has he described to be locker room talk, where he just really disparaged and degraded women on tape. I mean, he's already put out a public apology, which is crazy because that's something he doesn't do. But
did he do it very well? He probably doesn't have much practice, so I'm just wondering
exactly.
if it came out well.
I think he did a good job of bringing up Bill Clinton in it. So he just quickly went to a different place. But what, I mean, even since this came out in the afternoon, it is built and it continues to build.
Oh,
you may be right. This may be, at the end of the day, a bigger story than the Cubs if it
and
continues.
And a bigger story than the hurricane, too. I was watching it just before I came here, and I have to disagree with you, Justin, because I don't think that apology, do you? He said simply, if I offended anyone, I'm sorry.
Right.
How could he not have offended anyone?
Right. Well, but the thing is, if we talk about big stories, I guess it depends on how you define that. Because in the scheme of things, you know, who we elect to be the commander-in-chief of, you know, I guess we can't call ourselves always the leader of the free world any longer, but certainly still one of the heavy hitters, you know, one of the most influential. It's our country, whatever the standing is in the world, versus, yes, I know, former bat boy for the Cubs, that the Cubs is a big story and all these Cubs fans, and it's great as a feel-good moment. I mean, if they make it no further than the next three games, right? It's a great, you know, I mean, the city loves that. Chicago rallies around, but in terms of, you know, impact
story,
on your
right.
life.
You're talking about important, impactful stories. I'm talking about the biggest. You open any one of the newspapers today, turn on any television station here and actually anywhere in the country.
We just did an hour on it. Yeah.
But the Sun-Times today had 8 pages before it got to any news other than the Cubs.
I just don't define big by what's on the front page because they miss a lot of things.
They
have historically forever. So I mean,
I'm with you, Robin.
I sound like a former smoker that's really bad, you know, because I'm not a former member of the media. I still consider myself to be, a person who reports.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know that, you know, sometimes it's been argued that some of these big stories are really a distraction from the important stories that will, you know, come.
Well, obviously, if it would be, I mean, up to this afternoon, if it wasn't going to be Trump and this hidden audio with Billy Bush, you know, the Hurricane Matthew hitting the Florida coast is one that I would say for biggest story, just for the fact that the rhetoric that was involved in it went so far to say, this is not a normal hurricane. This is something we've never seen before.
it will kill you.
Well, it killed 800 some people in Haiti, which has become kind of a postscript to the story almost. But that's right. Huge, you know, human tragedy. But and the fact that it looped around, it's like it's a hurricane that just
right.
just keeps
the,
giving.
Yep.
It's a big story, and you know, people saying, you know, we're not leaving because we think we'll be okay, and you know, just kind of taking that risk, and that being seen as some sort of like the people that do the extreme sports or something, yeah. You know, like we yeah, like.
It's and we're going to see a lot of images and a lot of stories that come out after the storm passes through. Right now, it's in Georgia, South Carolina, that area. I mean, this is going to be something that when the storm actually, and there's talk about it actually coming back as a tropical storm. But when it goes out to sea, when it dies out, there's going to be so much more about flooding, about misery, about the things that it left behind as well. So I say those are probably the top three stories. We've got Trump, Cubs, and the hurricane.
One aspect of the hurricane story that interests me is how I think, in a way, it demeans the quality of news. Because all the television stations did was send every single big name on television down to Florida to talk, and they were saying for 3 hours that this is murder, and the politicians were using that time, the Governor Scott of Florida saying this is going to be a killer, killer, killer storm.
Right.
And then, you know, after about 5 hours, no doubt it was strong, but it wasn't what they said it was. And by tomorrow we're going to find, I think, I don't know, we're going to find that it wasn't as big as they're saying that it is right now.
It's
kind of, one more thing, it's kind of the Dan Rather model of covering storms. Dan Rather was in Texas when he was a young reporter, and he stood in front of the cameras and let the wind blow him halfway off his feet. Look where he wound up. That's what all these reporters are striving for. They stand in the middle of the storm, and they hold
and they say,
heads.
Don't come out here,
yeah, right,
where
right.
I am. Well, Walter, this should be put into context that Walter has never been a fan of leading with weather. Like, it better be really doing something, because it does kind of pander to the, if we scare them enough, they will be glued to their television
yeah.
sets. And so,
they,
as we know,
they're doing.
When anything really bad happens, hut levels, households
there was, I mean,
using
there's
TVs
a, there's
goes
a
up.
Great clip of Shepard Smith. Is it Shepard's? Is that the
yeah.
right name? From
That's
Fox,
a person. That's
who actually said, he said, he was showing the map and he said, this, you have to leave. This will kill you. It will kill your children.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Are you scared
yeah,
now?
Yeah, right. Robin Robinson, Walter Jacobson in studio. We're reloading this week's news. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll get to the winners and losers and the overreported and underreported stories of the week. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. The week that was, we're reloading the week with Walter Jacobson and Robin Robinson in studio. Gosh, this is so great. Any Chicagoan right now, come on. This is the greatest thing ever.
Well, of a certain age.
No, of all ages. The 10-year-old's got to figure it out at some point, right? All right, so let's talk. We did the biggest story. Let's go to winners and losers. Walter, who you got for a winner? Who's a winner this week?
Well, I'm hoping it's going to be Joe Madden, but I think it's Hillary Clinton. She's going to be in a terrific position on Sunday to win that debate and then just take off. And the Republican Party is stunned by this. If you haven't been watching it all afternoon, you really miss some great drama on television. I mean, all of the Republican leaders, from Ryan to who else?
Mitch McConnell to all the
Well, they weren't big fans to begin with.
Right. But they don't know where to go here. I mean, they obviously are going to condone it. They're going to say, you know, or not condone it. They're going to say no, that this is outrageous. But at the same time, and we've already seen surrogates come out, Trump surrogates, saying, you know, they're going to bring out their talking points, almost like break glass, and it's about Clinton's, and it's about adultery, and it's about Clinton's alleged rapes. That's already come out tonight. Like, they are going to do everything they possibly can to make this a dual story.
It is low down. These people got to look up see down. It's
that will be as low as it can get. Let me tell you, if in case you missed it, some of the quotes off that tape that was made on a bus on Access Hollywood when he was on a bus with a bunch of guys. Let me just a couple of.
Where have these tapes been? I have to wonder.
Yeah, waiting.
Yeah,
waiting
where have
in
these
the wings.
Tapes been?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. Somebody at NBC. Leaked the tapes to the Washington Post, and somebody there then made them available to the media. But some of the things he said,
right?
when you are a star, I mean, yeah, you could hear it in his voice. When you are a star, you can do anything. I just start kissing him, and then I can do whatever I want to do with him after I start kissing him. He said, Clinton has said far worse things to me on the golf course.
That's what he said. That's what he said in response. That's what he said today, as he was.
But
asked
does he
about
have
it.
A tape?
He doesn't have that tape. Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, there is something to be said about. I mean, hearing him talk about it, you're right. It's very braggadocious. I guess it's like it's like.
Yeah, there you go. He used that word. He used that word during
it's
the
debate.
It's
very like I've got my chest out and I'm just like, yay, I'm with the guys.
And maybe this is how guys talk when they're together. Yeah, I really would like to think not.
It's not. but I mean, I think that, you know, and Walter stayed away from the more vulgar stuff that was said that had to be beeped out and stuff that I think everybody in this
country
is
saying. But what do you think about the fact that he has said himself, I could shoot someone in broad daylight in the middle of the street and my supporters are still going to be with
me.
That's
right.
I mean, I don't know that there is anything. It's not like it's all.
But that was stating a political reality. That's different from his attitude about women and what men and women can and cannot do to one another. And people, his surrogates, Lewandowski, for example, Corey Lewandowski has been saying all afternoon that this just speaks to he speaks his heart. And right. Then, of course, if
and this
that's
is just
his heart
this is what
speaking,
America says at their dinner table. He's right. Just following.
If he says I shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and it won't hurt me at all in the polls in this campaign, he's stating reality. It probably won't.
Well, then why is this?
But
why
if he says it's okay for me to grope because I'm a star.
But Robin's right. How is this going to be any different in a political reality? Are we going to see his polls drop? Are people going to not vote for Donald Trump for what he said in 2005? Probably not.
Well, the political ground game is much different now, too. I mean, it's not he isn't winning votes that he needs to win. He is winning support of the people he needs to support him if he's going to win the states that are up for grabs.
I will say this. I had this down as also one of my rabbit hole stories because I kind of went in on some of the stories that were about how these campaigns are being run. Donald Trump wants to run on a media platform. He didn't put a lot of money into ads. He hasn't done a ground game at all. It's very different. He's not doing the way the standard.
Because everything he does, we follow and cover incessantly.
Exactly.
And so why should he buy an ad? He's entertainment.
There was this story was about how this is not good, not unlike what it was for Mitt Romney when Hurricane Sandy came through, but when the Hurricane Matthew pushes Trump to the second story, this is not good because this essentially freezes the campaign at the worst possible time. He's not in the news. But then again, here it comes. I mean, even if it's a negative story, this story actually outdoes the hurricane coverage.
His strategists say, they all seem to agree, and as do the experts, with a set of figures that show that Donald Trump must get beyond his base. He must attract women, Republican women who are more moderate, from the suburbs, who are more toward Clinton because they don't like Trump. How can that possibly? Can you imagine any woman who heard him on that tape think about voting for the man? If he doesn't get those votes, he's had it.
Well, they definitely don't want to date him, whether they want to vote him or not.
That's a good
point.
Yeah.
Robin Robinson, Walter Jacobson in studio tonight. All right, let's take a quick break. We got an update on Rob Martyr's news, get an update on the Cubs game, everything in between. And then we'll come back. We'll continue winners and losers, and we'll also do to overreported, underreported, and continue here reloading this week's news. Stay with us. Welcome back to the download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. Robin Robinson, Walter Jacobson in studio. The longtime anchors at Fox Chicago reunited here to play Week in Review this week. So great to have you guys both. Robin, you've got a new job. You're director of community affairs.
Titles always elude
Chicago
me.
Chicago Police Department.
Yeah, you have to have a title if you work for the city. So
that's
they
for the
saying,
budget, right?
That's, yeah, right. They have to put something in there. They kept saying, "Well, what's your title?" I said, "I don't know. Just call me Robin." It was but I am the director.
Are you enjoying it?
I am enjoying it. It's like all the things that I used to do in my spare time, to try to. Try to help connect people in the community with resources, with each other, with things that can improve in the communities that are suffering, some of the worst violence and that's just the end symptom of all the things that happened before that. You've got the worst education, you've got the worst employment situation, you've got no business district, you've got no opportunity, no hope, no mobility. And at the end of it, when all that happens, then you have violence.
You could tell me no comment. You could tell me to
go away.
But
he's
I have a question I think you'll be happy to answer.
Okay.
Question you'll be happy to answer.
Okay.
Give me an example of what you do or what you have done that will make us all feel better about what you're doing with Eddie Johnson. For example.
I am humanizing police officers and people in the community who have both been victims of terrible stereotyping. If there are young children in African-American communities that see a person in a police uniform and if you're 3 years old, burst out in tears or run and hide, they are afraid. There are people who see a young black man with his pants sagging and tattoos and dreadlocks and cross the street or run away. They're afraid. It is the mirror image of a stereotype that is based on the worst of what we see constantly and overreported on the news. That's all we see of those communities. That's all we see of police is when they do something wrong or when something goes wrong or becomes some sort of grim tally of shootings and murders and not what good goes on there or what good is being done by people who live there, because that doesn't represent the majority, or even there's no balance, right? So I connect people in a personal way. So we may have a peace circle with young people and police officers. We may have a dinner, we call it on the table, like the community trust does, where you sit together as human beings and talk about your truth, because everybody sees it from their perspective. So what I find is that you find what you have in common. You know, we are not just a cop or a disenfranchised young black youth from, you know, from Inglewood. You are human beings at your core who want the exact same thing and just need to be connected to the way that you can work together to get to that thing, which is contentment. We all want a quality of life. You know, we all want to live in a neighborhood that looks like right outside these studios, right, where people are walking around, they're happy, they're safe, they're shopping, they had a nice dinner. That's what everybody wants, and that's not what everybody has in Chicago. And when you have such disparity, you are going to end up with places where you almost have to be over-policed if you're under-resourced. And if you're over-policed, you're badly policed. But there are some great people in the police department, just like I've always known. There are great people in our communities, communities that most people, maybe you wouldn't even go out of your way to drive around, right? But I've always been in them, as you have, Walter, because as reporters, we kind of felt like we have this kind of immunity, and found the exact same people, whether I'm on the Gold Coast, you know, or in Roseland. They are the people want the same things, and they don't have them.
One of my battles with the media has been the way the television stations really create these images of African Americans in a negative sense, profile them. You cannot turn on a television news station without seeing a crime story that leads the news two or three stories deep every night, night after night. Not big stories, just another dry. Should be a big story,
but it's not
another driveway by shooting, and all you see on the screen is a picture of a young African American, as you say, in dreadlocks, and then you see a body being carried out, and then another picture.
But it's not just about overreporting by news. Think about all media and where we are absent. I've become kind of obsessed with our absence. You know, in things showing great times and wealth and prosperity, you can have an entire crowd scene of people and there'd not be a single African American in that. So, you know, continuously, day after day, year after year, decade after decade, you get this image in your head of what that represents. What does it mean when you think of, you know, the black community or of black people? What does it mean, you know, that you're not thinking, you know, great, you know, wealthy, educated, you know, powerful. We are absent from those media images just as we are overly present in a negative way in news images.
Now that you've stepped away from being an anchor and being, I mean, is that sort of perspective, is that
there was always my perspective.
But now you see, when you see media, when you see even the 9 o'clock news at Fox Chicago, do you feel that?
I felt it then. I spent, you know, 20 years fighting in editorial meetings, you know, saying, okay, you want to do that story. Is there another story? Can we get some balance here? Can we be intentional about it? And Walter was always fighting the fight. You know, we cannot just continue to report crime just as crime. You know, if you can get some meaning behind it, great, but you're just painting these communities as places where bad stuff happens. He really didn't like
it. So then the question becomes, why do we keep doing it?
Because, and my argument was, people have to live in places where these things happen, the very least we can do is be aware of it, because if we don't know, we won't do anything about it. And my latest thing that I really have grabbed onto at a conference this week, where we had Dr. Joy DeGruy, who wrote Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome and actually talks about how we got where we are, how we can leave from it. Everybody has trauma from the history of this country, not just black people. Everybody has trauma from it, and it's untreated. But Pastor Chris Harris said, you can't talk about violence if you're not doing something about violence. So we all talk about it constantly, but what are you actually doing?
And
I'm not asking
it?
You to go out there
yeah.
and, you know, change the world. Just do one thing, okay? Go someplace where you haven't been. You know, talk to someone you haven't talked to. Talk to, start having a conversation about disparity and race and inequity and unearned privilege. Start, that is a hard conversation.
I have to say, I mean, this is probably the most enlightened, overreported, underreported segment.
I'm sorry.
But you're right. I mean, in this discussion, in this segment, you know, we say, what's the most overreported? What's the most underreported? And in this conversation we're having, we're hitting both sides. The yeah. idea that overreported crime, underreported is
progress,
just progress and things that are happening that just the news has no interest in.
I still have not got an answer from you or anybody else. I think I do have an answer myself of why the media does what we're saying it does for the, not for the welfare of the community, but for the detriment of the community.
Well, you know
those stories, bad stories about crime in the inner city are what create a national, and more specifically in a town like this, a local division between black and white that's not going to be healed by having your community meetings. It's got
to
be
human being to human being. Well, but that, I also think you have to.
That would be good, but it's somewhat idealistic. What I would like to do, first of all, is put some restraints on the people who make the decisions in the newsrooms as to what kinds of stories to cover.
Well, good luck with that First Amendment fight.
The African American involvement in cultural and business activities that you speak of, that you say, and I agree, the media doesn't cover enough. The only time the media seems to be covering something that happens to be either black or white is when there is a crime involved and it's black, and when there's a big meeting
or a crime involved and there's or something bad involved and there's police involved, right? So we're creating.
Right.
But what I'm saying is, no one's going to put restraints on how people making decisions about what to cover. But what is changing it is that we don't depend on those outlets for our news anymore, right? So the whole. This is the world is your studio, all right? And you can open your phone, maybe not you, Walter, and be Facebook Live in a heartbeat. And you can, and people can seek out the news that they want, and you can really empower new voices. And they are these young people that are starting to be so activists. They don't watch the news; they have their own news streams,
course,
all right?
Right?
And they, you know, and it's that has a negative aspect too.
Well,
much of the violence is being. How can I put it? Not perpetrated, but there's a social media component to it.
Yeah.
You know, you shot our guy. We're coming over to shoot your guy.
Show, yeah. It's immediate.
But everybody wants to be a celebrity, and they're creating a celebrity culture within, you know, a dysfunctional and deadly, but what's available to them industry. All right. So
Walter Jacobson, Robin Robinson.
We'll keep arguing
in studio.
After we go
now
off.
Let's take a quick break so we stay on time here. And this is great. That was our overreported, underreported. Mine was Kardashian Robin. So
oh, yeah.
I feel like
which was under, overreported
that.
For
yeah.
you. Okay,
I said overreported.
We're sorry.
My
point being, I do nothing Kardashian.
This is so much better
than
mine.
We could tie that to the police stuff too. Why don't you
yeah.
say that?
We could do that. We
yep.
could do that. But we'll take a break instead. Robin Robinson, Walter Jacobson, reloading this week's news here on the Download 720 WGN. Stay with us. It's 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Walter Jacobson, Robin Robinson in studio tonight. We're reloading the week that was. We're doing the big stories, the winners, the losers, the overreported, the underreported. Which story took you down the rabbit hole tonight, and which story will be remembered 50, 100, 500 years from tonight?
Mm.
Let's stay on underreported. Today, my underreported is a story. It's a huge story with Chicago Police. Great to have you. It's great
story.
Timing to have you here.
We didn't plan this. That's true.
But the move to change to a use of force, to change the way we see use of force in the police department, to really change the policy and to get public input. This is something that would have been big news in Chicago if it wasn't for the Cubs, the Hurricane, and Donald Trump.
You know, but the good thing about it is it's not today. The story's not here and done. There was a time we would have said, this is the new order. This is our new use of force policy. Great. Go. And, you know, let's go with it. But instead, what you have now is 45 days for the public as well as police personnel because if, let's remember they are members of the public, to comment, to suggest, to say, well, we think maybe you could tweak it here, or how about that? Because to think that all the wisdom lies within, you know, the Chicago Police Department leadership cannot be right.
And this is what a lot of community activists and others have talked about, this idea of transparency and public input and saying
co-creating like things. Yeah. You know, people have to let you know how they want peace to be kept in their communities. I mean, it's really... people buy into and own things that they have helped create. And I can tell you that we're very sincere. The superintendent is very sincere about the fact that this is a proposed order. It is a draft order, and it's out there online.
Is essentially the concept to change the old sort of use of force, which was
it places sanctity of human life at the very top value. But it also, there are a couple of other major changes it proposes, like highlighting the fact, which has been true but kind of not maybe always been considered the most important part, that one officer should intervene if they see another officer who has, you know, you become emotionally involved, I'm sure. I don't know. Please let's be straight on this. I am not one of the brave people that puts my life on the line as a law enforcement person, right? So I can't get in their head, but it's got to be the most difficult thing in the world to be making these split second life and death decisions under a lot of scrutiny and with a lot of responsibility, right? But it says, you know, if you see a fellow officer who has gotten emotional, they're escalating when they should be de-escalating, you intervene. Not necessarily you report them and make sure they get fired, but you intervene right then, not report it later. You say, hold up, Joe, Gene, whoever it is, whoever your partner is, whoever's there, they could be of the same rank. So you're not technically their boss, but you are to intervene. And so that's one of the proposals.
We've seen a lot with the police department this week. We saw the new agency created by Rahm Emanuel on Wednesday.
Well, it's not an agency quite yet.
Yes. But the idea that it was voted in from council. Also, we saw today Superintendent Eddie Johnson, the story that went national about an officer who didn't want to use deadly force, didn't want to shoot somebody and was hurt by it, and she said this is through the superintendent, but the superintendent saying that, hey, you know what, she feared that there would be backlash and she would be her family would be in danger, and she chose not to use
force. That he'd have to explain. But just because those are two of the things that she considered, which I can't even imagine in that moment of having someone, the person actually turned out to be probably in a drug state of
PCP in the system, right?
Had her hair wrapped around his wrist and was banging her head on the ground, had punched her. Her partner was tasing him. But to be having those considerations along with, can I end this without loss of life? So it's not that those are the only things. She wasn't just thinking about.
We're talking about how it was underreported. Mm-hmm. And the reason it's underreported is because it is a very sensitive, hugely touchy subject. That being, what about the police officers who are afraid to take the steps they need to take to get some peace and stop the violence, because they are going to wind up on the front pages of all the newspapers and on television? Because there is no question that woman, 43-year-old police officer, 17 years on the force, whose head was being bashed on the cement and is in the hospital right now, she should have shot that guy.
You can't ever say someone.
Yes,
it worked out.
Our problem,
but
Robin.
But look how it's worked out. They're both alive, Walter. That's not a better outcome. How can you possibly say that someone should be shot that ended up being? There are people who say that people who, you know, blew things up and killed 100 people should have been shot too, but they managed to be taken into custody alive. So I think that for you to say after the fact, that's crazy. How could you say such a thing, that someone should be dead?
I didn't say, well.
Yeah, yes, you did. Take it back quick while you have a chance.
What we're afraid to do, and what we, because of politics, what we have caused the police to do is become crouch inside. They're afraid to act because they know the consequences of acting. And she said that too.
That's not the only reason she didn't shoot him, I'm sure. I can't get inside her head. But I do think that we do need to value the service that police officers provide, and that just as they have been stereotyped by the actions of the worst, right? And other groups of people are experiencing the same thing, that we have to find a way to give them the ability to do what they, most of them, the vast majority, signed up to do, which is to really help people. And but they have to also have clear direction. So one of the things that the superintendent said about the, you know, reissuing and kind of and rewriting really, and it's really a model that doesn't compare to anything in the country, rewriting the use of force order, yeah, is that it codifies. It says, you know, really spells things out, and the rank and file officers will not be, this order will not be adopted until they've been trained on it. But it's not like someone gives you a piece of paper and says, okay, now this is what you're going to do.
But what Walter's talking about is not going to go away, and you're seeing John Cass wrote a big article about it in the Tribune today. I mean, the concept of this Ferguson effect, where police officers are afraid to act because they're afraid they're going to get, in the newspapers, and they're going to have problems with their family. That's something that I think, as a society, we're going to have to address at some point. I mean, even the mm-hmm. mayor has gone out okay. and kind of talked about the concept of, I guess it's the concept of the blue flu, kind of, where the morale is so low that we're seeing, you know, possibly spikes in crime because police officers don't want to get involved.
Well, just as you don't hear the whole story of how people operate and are, you don't hear the whole story of how people feel about police officers, right? Most of us have somebody in our family that's a police officer, so right. we know on some level that they're human beings. The question for people becomes, why can't you make sure that those of you who you know are not acting with integrity like you are, why can't you make sure that they're not there? Well, right. There's going to be no perfection. But when I hear things like the Ferguson effect, I want to know, well, are we going to talk about the Ferguson effect of what brought that community to the point of desperation to begin with? We're going to talk about the Roseland effect, the Englewood effect, the Woodlawn effect.
Why people come out to protest in such large numbers when there is a police shooting? And you see this a lot, and a lot of people maybe actually for police or whatever, or Blue Lives Matters kind of say, you know, that person wasn't the greatest person in the world. You don't know all the facts, blah, blah. But it's the idea that around the country, communities will go out and protest for someone they didn't know from Baton Rouge or from Minnesota, says something very, very
deeper than
what's happening. Robin Robinson, Walter Jacobson in studio the week that was. All right, we come back. We'll do Rabbit Hole and what story will be remembered. We're going to get an update from Rob Martier as well on the Cubs game. Stay with us. Welcome back to 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's a download. Walter Jacobson, Robin Robinson. It's great. Long form reloading this week's news. Great to see you guys.
That's his way of saying we talk a lot.
No, absolutely not. This is a conversation we all want to have. With you guys, like, obviously, you know, did the news for so long at Fox Chicago, but the concept of having a conversation about the news that you cover and what's happening around us, especially this week, is great. Yeah. We were just having the conversation about the police officer, just this Ferguson effect, the concept of this woman who was on the force for 17 years, who did not use deadly force.
Mm-hmm. When she could have. And Walter and I argue, we've had many debates over the years of whether she should have. And even our boss says she says she knew she should have, but she didn't. And so I think if she had, no one, you know, obviously all these things could investigate, but no one could have blamed her. Right. But I think it's heroic that everybody got to live, that all human life was preserved.
But I also wanted to raise the question of the opportunity that I think the superintendent, Eddie Johnson, lost, and that was to develop some kind of position that will give the police force the confidence to do the work it has to be done. I don't want to get on the racial side of this one or the other, and I know you've kind of pinpointed me or locked me into a box where if I say the police should be more comfortable doing what needs to be done to bring some peace, that sounds like I want to say it's okay for police to go around shooting people. And you know I don't believe that. I'm on the other side of that issue. But I think the question is so wrought with politics.
The police should certainly know.
The superintendent has to take a position if there's any chance of keeping that number down of homicides, the homicide number. 5,000 people have been shot in Chicago this year.
No, not 5,000.
500 people have been shot.
No, 500 and something. Almost 600 have been killed. About 3,000 or more have been shot. Peacekeeping is certainly something that has to go way beyond the police department. And I think when you say the superintendent needs to, he can't make sure that you revere police officers. And I think they should be. I hate to say, I mean, let's face it. Could you do that? Could you make those kind of split second decisions? I mean, these are people who you know, they got into this work to help people,
right.
And yet, you know, we've been doing policing kind of the same way for many, many years, and we're not any safer, and there's no less violence. So obviously,
and we've seen I would say like a, I guess, the right word for it, but a disintegration of the relationship between communities and in some parts of Chicago and the
police. Yeah, because we've given them almost an impossible task. You know, we've said, you know, we're going to pull everything out of this community, leave them just, you know, just,
yeah, bare
just
bones,
with nothing, bare bones. Right. Now go in there, take care of that, do it nicely. I think that you have to start looking at the broader issues because all of the social ills and failures fall at the doorstep of police and
okay, Rob, but that is said over and over.
Well, when are you going to do something
about it? Let me just finish my sentence.
No,
that's been said over and over again, mm-hmm. 100 times already from everybody, from the president to the mayor to the policeman on the beat. Mm-hmm. Let's do something about strengthening these communities. Let's spend our money not on building a basketball court for DePaul, not on building beautiful fences along the outer drive, but put the money in the neighborhoods that need the help to create jobs. That's been said. We've mm-hmm. said that. What are you going to do to stop the violence tomorrow? What do you think can be done?
What are you willing to accept? If it stopped it tomorrow, if they locked everybody up, would you accept that?
No. Don't stretch my argument. That's unfair.
I'm just saying, you know, it's what would you be willing to have in your neighborhood if there were violence?
If I were Eddie Johnson and Rahm Emanuel, mm-hmm. I would say that we must stop this immediately. We've tried everything. We've gone to the legislature. We can't get kind of the legislation to put more control on weapons and gun licenses.
So what would stop it immediately?
The police force to do its job and make people feel okay about it.
Okay.
And so
I would interject only in the sense that I think what I hear Robin saying, which is something that you know I don't hear all the time, is the fact that you pull all these resources out of a community and then you ask the police department unfairly to be not only the police but to be the social service agency, to be the community directors and everything. And it's just too much on the police, and it's not fair to them, and it's not also what they were trained to do.
I agree with that.
So the question really might be at a different level, if it's the mayor or the Cook County president mm-hmm. or somewhere else, to say we need to maybe bring mental health clinics back, or maybe we need to bring other services back to help the police be able to do their job.
To build the capacity of communities to resolve their own problems in partnership with police.
And what I hear you saying is, what are you going to do tomorrow?
You've got to create jobs. Yeah, because 500 people have been shot this year so far. And 500 shot, right?
500 killed.
And 2,000 shot.
3,000 shot.
Well, you know what? The numbers almost get to be dehumanizing. So, they all belong to someone.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll do our last break before we wrap up tonight. I want to talk about the teacher strike, which is a big story, and I think that that's one we'll talk about, and also what stories will be remembered coming up here 50, 100, 500 years from now. Walter Jacobson, Robin Robinson in studio with me tonight on a download. So happy 720 WGN. Stay with us. It's 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's a download. Walter Jacobson, Robin Robinson in studio with me tonight. We're reloading the week that was in news, and we pretty much covered all the big stories. The one that we haven't talked about, and it's really my rabbit hole story, yours was obviously was about the campaign, and we talked about the campaign a little bit with Trump and Clinton and police. We talked about police, and we continue to talk about that. Teacher strike. You know, I just was thinking about this today. Columbus Day is a day off for CPS, and that means that the teacher strike is set for October 11th. We could be in a situation where we will not see a classroom for parents of CPS, for the foreseeable future. We are seeing this story ratchet up, both sides, CPS, CTU, saying that they're going to hunker down. CTU has gone to the airwaves. I think they're playing commercials here on WGN to essentially make their case, because I would make the argument, I don't know how close you're paying attention to this, Walter, but I'd make the argument that this time around, it's a little bit more nebulous. It's a little bit more gray and vague about what they're actually fighting about.
Well, some of the numbers, however, are very clear. And the number that argues best for the teacher's position is that the city wants to take, the Board of Education wants to take away 7% of its salary by stopping its contributions to the pension program. And that's something that's easy to understand. And that's something that will get enough support from the citizenry to give the teachers the strength to walk out. I wouldn't be surprised if they do.
And I also say, I mean, this is a town that gets behind its teachers. It always has, you know, but Rahm Emanuel, Mayor Emanuel has said, and Forrest Claypool as well, that this would be a choice
right.
by the teachers, not a necessity. This would be a choice they would be making to harm the kids here in Chicago.
Yeah. Kind of a silly argument for the mayor to say it's a choice, not a necessity.
Well,
it's a necessity to them. It's a choice to him. I mean, that's just rhetoric, right?
Well, I mean, say it's a choice. I'm sure that the teachers would argue it was a choice over the years for you to underfund the pension so that you're now in a financial crisis. The pension crisis certainly goes beyond teachers. I mean, the whole state is in a pension crisis. And I think as people approach retirement age and young people are looking ahead to, will I ever be able to retire, that this whole, you know, we all know we're all looking at the idea of pension and pensioners a little bit differently. But, you know, this is, you know, it's like something was agreed to, and now we spent that money on something else, kind of a thing, and it just doesn't seem quite fair, but people, you can only pay what you can pay,
and fair is a big, I guess, component of this. Mm-hmm. Is you'll hear the city say, listen, we're all trying to give up our fair share. The city will say, you've seen all the pain we've just had to go through with taxes and homeowners and everything we need to do to make sure we're covering it, whether it be in the municipality or the police fund, pension, teachers, we need you as well to step up. Do you think at this time around, because we just went through this, 3 years ago or whatever, mm-hmm. do you think this time around, because it's been so public, the fact that we are out of money in the city of Chicago, that there possibly may be less support for teachers to take this stand?
I don't know. That's also been very public of some of the reasons that we're out of money. And I think that, if people have more, whether or not we've intended to be more transparent, as everyone says we are, I think we have been by just technology has made things more transparent. And I think that that there are people who say, you had, money for this, money for that. But by the same token, people want a better result from education. But you also have, at the same time, for the first time ever, a charter school threatening to strike.
It's
a charter
crazy.
School network. Is threatening to strike as well. So I think that the idea that there seems to be some, if not unwillingness, but not prioritizing a valuing of education.
How do you?
Even though we say that's at the base of everything.
And how do you see it playing out? We have seen our last school bell, in the sense that the Columbus Day the kids will be out, and Tuesday morning we will know if there is a strike or not.
Right,
Walter, how do you see it playing out?
Well, I think you can never doubt that Rahm Emanuel will somehow come up with what he needs to pull. Speaking of rabbit holes, pull a rabbit out of the hole in his hat. Somehow
I hope so.
He will do that. I wouldn't be surprised, as I said a few minutes ago, if the teachers actually walk out. But we've got 2 days at least to do something about it, and Rahm Emanuel will find a way. Emanuel, like all mayors before him, has all kinds of money that he could reach into in different ways if he really felt he has to.
I don't know if that's true. People always say that.
All he's got to do is open his Rolodex and call some of these big corporate CEOs who have been in his pocket for so long, and he wants to help. Wants to continue to help them to every extent he can, because that's good for the city as well. Watch him find a way to get out.
Well, they've been talking about raiding the TIF fund. This is the first time the TIFs, of course.
They did say they're going to use some of the TIF fund for some of this. I think, you talk about the Rolodex and private investment, because frankly, without an educated citizenry, we don't become such a good investment as a city. If we can't, because that, you're talking about fix things, immediately. We've got to. It took a long time to get here, and it'll take a long time, to get out of the current really tragic situation of the kind of two Chicagos. But one of the things I think most people agree upon is that a quality, excellent education is one of the things that we have to have. It is a little scary right now, though. I mean, the teachers are being told by their union, unless you hear otherwise, report to your school Tuesday morning at 6 a.m. with picket signs. And so we've got to be hoping that they are talking, right now.
Right.
I hope they're not watching the Cubs game. Speaking of which, what do you think? I know this is another subject, part of a different rabbit hole, but that's what happens. What did you think about the fact that any elected official who got free games, free tickets to the Cubs game, have to be announced at the game? Did we miss that too on tonight's broadcast?
I think FS1 didn't show that part.
70% of the aldermen have already accepted the ticket deal from the Cubs. 80% of the members of the Illinois General Assembly.
Well, what about members of the media? We used to get some free tickets.
Yeah.
Come on, let's admit
those days are long over.
Well, that's because we're not big anymore.
Right. And these tickets are not free. And
no, they're face value.
Well, ours weren't face free value. Either, to be honest. You know, but they were priceless because you can't get a ticket at face value.
And I think it's interesting that it was a fine print saying you will be announced. You'll publicly announce, right. Which is kind of like...
Because they march across the field, have them sing the national anthem, yeah, do something, right?
That's in the ethics code.
It is, yeah.
And also that the aldermen have to use the tickets that they buy for themselves, or at least they have
they
to be one
to, like,
of the two they get.
Lobbies and
stuff. And they will announce it. Yeah, I'll bet they do announce it over the PA system.
Like Connie's Pizza with Alderman James Gappelman.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Well, are you sure that he took the tickets? Because before you start naming names
and
things.
I just use them as
And what, if we, can we, should we not end on, if, yeah, right, let's on do, a happy note?
Okay, the last one is, which story from this week will be remembered in 5 years, 10 years, 50 years, 500 years. What's the story that people will remember from this week?
Whatever the Cubs, in here or nationwide or whatever.
In general, aliens pull out the capsule in general, 500 years from now.
Yeah, in general, it will be the campaign. Trump versus Clinton.
This story.
Think it's possible that Clinton will win it because Trump may bomb out.
Because of this one thing.
However, you know, if the Republicans have a chance to pick a new candidate, any one of those candidates who have been high in the polls up until the conventions might be Hillary.
How do they do
they
that?
They'd have to reconvene the convention.
Oh, Lord.
Or
news
that.
People would love this.
Long. Way too close.
Look at the Tribune. They couldn't endorse Trump. They wouldn't endorse
Johnson, right?
Clinton. They went to the Libertarian candidate, right?
Yeah. The Republican National Committee on its own, with 180-some members, could choose someone. They've got all the problems of getting on the ballot.
That's
all the deadlines aren't
met.
They're stuck with the horse that they came with at this point. Robin, what do you have for the story?
I think that will only be the one that's remembered 100 years from now if Trump wins.
If the Cubs win the World Series, that'll be news on.
Yeah, well, that's not
now.
This week,
right? So I think though that because the Cubs, are looking so good that this will be part of the historic.
This time will be remembered.
Yeah, it'll be. I mean, how long have we been talking about? It's like next year's finally here.
I think they'll remember this week. Two things I'll say before we wrap up. One, I wonder if this is the story, the Trump and the tape from Access Hollywood from 2005 being degrading to women and talking off on microphone. Is Mitt Romney's 47% comment is this the one that now he can't recover and we're going to see him actually peter out. But I want to say that the one that we will remember the story will be backup Chicago Bears quarterback Brian Hoyer. Because Brian Hoyer is going to win this week. Mm. He's going to continue a winning streak with this team. They're going to become the Cardiac Kids. The Bears will win the Super Bowl this year. And Brian Hoyer will all remember this week as the week that he started it all.
Okay. What happens to your guy Cutler?
Cutler who? Right?
Is there enough ventilation in the studio?
Brian Hoyer's valet. All right.
Robin Robinson, Walter Jacobson, it was a pleasure to have you together again in the studio here at WGN. I can't thank you enough for coming in and talking about the weekend news. It was a real pleasure. It was great for Chicago and Chicagoans to hear your voices.
Our pleasure to be here. I'm sure I speak for Robin when I say that.
He's been trying to speak for me for 20 years. Jesus.
Yes, that's right.
No. Yours is the only download that I feel technologically capable of completing. So thank you very much, Justin, for having me.
Nothing can stop me. I'm all the way up. Wanna wait? We don't wanna wait. We just wanna play. Set the summer straight. About to win 100 games. Jay Hay about to make a play. Let's just get the K. We feeling fresh today. Got the dub yesterday. New team with the World Series attitude. Road to the ship. That's the World Series avenue. Feeling like the baddest dude. Foul on the bases. Yeah, we win in pennant races. That's a Wrigley renovation.
I'm all the way up. Current. That's a relevant rap song. That one's on the radio right now. They're already getting the parodies of the I'm All the Way Up. All right. It's a download here at 720 WGN. A couple programming notes coming up here at 10 o'clock. Sam Panionovich will be in for Preps Plus Chicago. Take a look at all the high school football games happening in and around the state of Illinois. Looking forward to that. That's coming up at 10 o'clock. And also tonight at 11 o'clock, Adam Hogue is going to do the post game for the Cubs game. It'll be at 11 o'clock, even if the game hasn't ended. True Blue Playoff Plus post game from Wintrust, home of Cubs checking. That will be coming up 11 to 12. I think Patty Vasquez is going to take over around midnight. Well, right now, the Cubs are in the bottom of the fifth inning, and there still is no score at Wrigley. A couple of things to note from the game for the series. The Chicago Cubs will get to see San Francisco Giants pitcher Jeff Samardzija tomorrow. How great is that? Jeff Samardzija comes back to Wrigley Field to pitch for a different team. Game two tomorrow. And as we were talking with Robin and Walter, that game is on MLB Network, MLB 1, I think it's called. Anyway, that will be coming up tomorrow night, so get ready to scratch your head and try to figure out where the game's at tomorrow night. All right, let's go up to Wrigley Field right now. Mark Carmen standing by, WGN Radio, of course. Mark, how's the game? How's the feel? How's the tension? How's your blood pressure?
I'm okay, Justin. Thank you for checking in. I apologize for the background noise here. There's just not a lot of good options on where to go. We are two outs, bottom five. Javi Baez with a two-out single. So David Ross at the plate has had two huge plays, picking off a runner at first and a caught stealing in the first inning. As you might imagine, the Giants coming out bunting against John Lester, it worked, but then Ross with the caught stealing. So, I got Bill Murray five rows in front of me. I got Anna DeBlantes five rows behind me, and I got the mayor to my right. So it's I feel very much intimidated by my seat positioning right now.
Well, I love it. As the game moves on, the one thing the Cubs have started to figure out a little bit of Johnny Cueto with a couple late-inning hits here, but Johnny Cueto has been dealing like we thought he would, really for the first three innings, no hitting the Cubs.
Yeah, he looks comfortable out there. I mean, it's a big game pitcher who's, pitched in World Series games, won World Series games. He's got a very funky motion, so he just keeps on burying it all over the place. Sometimes he goes slow, sometimes he goes fast, sometimes he hesitates. He's actually, if you were just, watching this for pure baseball and not living and dying with every pitch, he's really a very enjoyable, crafty guy to watch. There's not a lot of guys like him, but you would hope if you were the Cubs that he had a lot more pitches than 68 right now, bottom five. You're somewhere in the 80s, 90s, knowing that he'd be out of the game, which is what I was hoping for. But this guy, looks like he's going minimum seven, maybe eight. Who knows? At this rate, he could throw a complete game.
All right, John Lester on the other side. He's given up a couple more hits, five hits. How's he looked? He's gotten out of a couple jams thanks to his old catcher, David Ross. But do you see him going deep in the game here?
I think Lester looks good. He's got that John Lester steely determination look going on. He's thrown his curveball, from what I can tell, a bunch, and he's thrown all his pitches for strikes. So, the one major throw when they had second and third after Ben Zobrist perhaps misplayed a low line drive and left. I think he could have made the play. Saying misplay is a little harsh, but bottom line, a second and third, two outs. Lester got a weak ground ball to short to get out of it. So that was the biggest moment of the game so far.
All right, so as we talked about in the pregame, it really is about late innings, and at this point, do you see any indication of what the Cubs might do with their bench?
That's a great question. No one has defense, so at some point here, you would think that Jorge Soler would have a huge at bat, or Wilson Contreras, somebody of that ilk, and everybody is obviously sitting there, I'm sure, ready to take their turn when they get their shot. But the chess match is not yet to begin, but we're getting close to it all unfolding.
All right, Mark Carmen at Wrigley Field checking in tonight. Mark,
Justin, I wish you were here to give me a hug, just so you know.
Keep it in check. Use your mantra. Use your mantra, okay?
Thank you.
Take care. Thanks, Mark. Checking in. He'll also check in. He'll be part of the post game tonight with Adam Hoge. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. Sam Panjanovic will join us. We'll talk a little bit high school sports, also get us updated on what the Cubs have done in the meantime. It is the download here on 720 WGN. Stay with us.
I am not betting against my Cubs. I am not betting against my Cubs. They're just like my city. They're young, scrappy, and gritty, and I'm not betting against my Cubs. I'm a guy to beat your seat at Wrigley Field. Price and hope the dope next year is here for real. Problems in the past, we get close, couldn't close the deal. I'm feeling fearful, we're at first, because we are cursed, is our fate sealed? Began the century, tinkers ever's to chance, trying to reach the dance on happy endings, crappy circumstance. 1908, E. Muscatuli, each heartbreaking defeat is truly a cruelty. F. Steve Garvey and those amazing Mets, F. the 98 Braves and the ball through Durham's.
is the download here on 720 WGN. Pete Zimmerman, of course, finding all the jams, all the deep cuts tonight for the Chicago Cubs game one against the San Francisco Giants of the NLDS at Wrigley Field. Right now, in the sixth inning, it is no score coming up on the top of the sixth. Pete, how you feeling? Pete Zimmerman, of course, our resident diehard Cubs fan. He wears the Cubs hat whenever the Cubs have a big game, as he is today.
Nervous.
You nervous? Are you? Do you fall more in the calm camp of pessimism over optimism?
No, I'm pretty optimistic about this team. I think they're going to do it. I don't know if the, I mean, they'll get past this round. They'll make it to the World Series, and we'll see who what happens then. I strapped myself down in the chair as to avoid my pacing, because I just want to pace. I want to walk all over the place.
You're a pacer.
I'm a pacer.
A pacer. I have to say, I mean, right now, answer me this, and Sam Panionovich is in studio now. He's joining us as well. I'm both you guys can answer, as you know, Sam covers the Cubs, and Pete, you love the Cubs. Are the Cubs a late inning clutch team? Are they the kind of team that has a record from the season of winning tight ball games, one run games, late inning games, things of that nature?
Pete's pointing at me, and I'm pointing at him. Historically, they're not. This year, they are. Right. This year, they've added those jug runs late in games. They've been up 1-0, 2-0, and then they hit a 2-run homer in the eighth. To go up. So ideally right now, you know, still nothing. That's the David Ross curse, though, right? Like, all right, he picks a guy off, but he can't hit.
Right.
You know, you had a guy, did you have a guy in scoring position there when he
I
just
struck
out? I think
Bias was on first, but he struck out.
Oh, he was on first.
Yeah, but the point being that that's the liability of having a, and I don't say this with any sort of negative, but it's essentially a pet catcher in the way that a catcher that only, you know, catches for specific pitchers, especially when they're offensively challenged like David Ross is. You got guys on the bench like Wilson Contreras and Miguel Montero who have played in those positions and you know, have succeeded this year.
Well, John Lester makes a lot of money, and you want him to be comfortable. And with Ross behind the plate, that's certainly a nice combo. With this game right here and in most playoff games, whoever makes the first mistake is going to lose. Right now, both teams are pretty much mistakeless. You know, there's no mistakes yet. I mean, we just saw a sliding catch, a replay for the Giants. Cubs have been flashing leather. It might be 1-0 tonight, whoever blinks first.
What's interesting, too, and this is something that Carm brought up, and I think that we should pay very close attention, is if the Cubs, if Lester is chased, let's say in the seventh or eighth inning, before you get to Chapman in a tie game, maybe down a run, or even up a run, who's your eighth inning go-to? Who comes in the game for the Chicago Cubs to get that crucial out against Buster Posey or against Brandon Belt where they need it? Are you talking about a Carl Edwards Jr.? Are you talking about Pedro Strop? Is he healthy enough? Or, of course, Hector Rondon?
It's Strop or Rondon in the eighth. If it's a left-handed guy at the plate, if it's Brandon Crawford or if it's Brandon Belt, maybe Travis Wood. Might be Travis Wood. Although I wouldn't put it past Madden to bring in Chapman in, like, the eighth inning.
Yeah. Is he the kind of guy that has that kind of rep? Can he go eighth and ninth?
You could bring him in the seventh. Andrew Miller for Cleveland the other day came in, I think he came in the fifth inning, and he threw the fifth and the sixth, and he got a couple guys out in the seventh. So he went 2+.
Wow.
I don't think you want to burn out your 105-mile-an-hour man in game one, but this is an important one. You don't want to go down 0-1 and then have to throw a guy in Kyle Hendricks who's never won a playoff game in game two. Then your skin starts to crawl because you're like, oh, no. This is a very important game one for the Cubs.
Now, obviously, there's the baseball side of this, and you were up in Wrigley today. You know, for the pregame, you were up there. But there's also the fan side of this. Wrigleyville was hopping. I mean, talk about the experience up there. I mean, you're talking tons of bars that have the lines, and everyone right now is bated breath getting ready to drink. Like, is that the idea? This Wrigleyville is going to be crazy.
You
all
say
night.
Waiting to drink?
Yeah. I mean,
what are they waiting for? The sun to come up? No, they've been drinking all day. In fact, I got there about 3:00, and I think I saw somebody throwing up at Murphy's.
Oh no!
I was like, you know, 3:05. It's just the way it goes. There's an excuse, and you know, God bless those people. It was a Friday. I think you and I have talked about this before. They clinched actually.
Yeah.
On a Friday. They clinched the division
weird,
on a Friday.
Yeah.
So, you know, honey, tell the kids I'll be home late. You know, all the guys are.
Do you notice from being up there? I mean, you were there when the fans filled in. Is it a different clientele? I mean, is there? Can you tell that it is the people who've got the Bartman headphones on and the suits? Like, I mean, is there any sort of? You've covered the Cubs all year. I mean, do you feel a difference in who's at the park tonight?
It's not the clientele. It's the amount of people. The streets were lined. You know, Sheffield, Waveland, Clark, Addison. Every street was loaded. They were all blockaded off. A lot more policemen, a lot more EMTs for people to pass out, a lot more foot traffic, a lot more, you know, bottles and cans and things like that. So it's the noise factor. I always talk about the noise. It was so immensely loud 3 hours before the game with the Let's Go Cubs and people just getting rowdy for this Cubs playoff push. And that's what it is. It's the amount of people. It's not what they're wearing. It's just the amount,
the amount
of people.
John Lester, let's get back to baseball. John Lester is dealing right now into the sixth inning. He only has 72 pitches. I mean, there's an opportunity here for John Lester going into, you know, the sixth inning to be able to pitch at least into the eighth inning if he gets out of it, and he does get out of it. That as he runs, beautiful, beautiful John Lester grounder right back to the mound.
He doesn't want to throw it.
He runs it over to first base because, as you know, he has some sort of strange Chuck Knobloch hang up with throwing the ball to first
Steve Sachs.
It looked like the ball was stuck in his mitt. You know, that happened to him a couple of times this year. It was like he could not take the ball out of like the web. It was like
so
sticking out.
It
yeah, it's funny.
Get a new glove.
But my point being that, you know, John Lester, of course, you know, if it goes the way that it has been going, if you have a tight game, it looks as if you get to the top of the ninth inning, you're going to have the top of the Giants order, which includes Brandon Belt and Buster Posey, coming up against an Aroldis Chapman. So even if it goes the way it's going, I mean, we're going into the seventh inning here, so you'll have the seventh, eighth, and ninth. But right now you're seeing him just mowing down. He just got through the top of the order of the Giants. So it could be a great sort of fantastic baseball finish with some of the stars coming up against the star pitcher in Aroldis Chapman.
And how about this? Preps Plus is 10-11. True Blue playoff push is 11-12. We've been told we have to be off by 12. So if the game goes to extras,
oh no,
who knows?
Well, Patty will have it. I'm sure she'll talk about it. So you guys will stick around and talk with her as well.
Well, don't speak for me.
Well, what else? I mean, I know
I've got places.
That's
to be.
All you want to do is talk Cubs baseball.
And it's 0-0 after six.
But these are the kind of playoff games that are worth it. I mean, watching what's happening in Texas and Toronto, you're like, oh, cool. Or the or worse, the Indians in Boston. The Indians today, 6-0, was it, the final? That's not good. This is great. This is tense. It's, you know, you're down to the wire. Nobody scoring. Defensive battle. I'll take this any day over the 6-2. If we could just get a grand slam.
If the Cubs were winning 6-2, you wouldn't want
all
that?
Right. Well, if the Cubs were winning, right.
So if they're losing 6-2, it's bad. I see what you did there. Now, I know you right now listening, there's the positive Cub fan. Mm-hmm. Like, all right, it's going to happen. And then there's the negative Cub fan that's just waiting for the left hook to the jaw. They're waiting for somebody to tee one off onto Sheffield.
All right, so coming up here, you guys are going to talk high school football. What are the big matchups? I mean, we haven't talked because we weren't on, I think, last Friday. But who's dominating this year, both the obviouses and the surprises?
Well, I mean, your obvious contenders, Loyola, Homewood, Flossmoor, Lincoln Way East. Your surprise teams this year, Brother Rice, Neuqua Valley, Palatine, Prairie Ridge.
Hmm.
Game of the week this week is number 12 Hinsdale Central at number 9 Lions. That's in the West Suburban Silver. Both teams are 6-0.
Okay.
So that's a big one today. And then we're also going to talk to Mike Clark from the Chicago Tribune. He covered a game on the south side of Chicago, Simeon against Dunbar. The team's not really that good this year, but the issue behind the teams, there's a looming strike in Chicago Public Schools.
Oh yeah. How does that affect that has to play a big role with football.
If there is a strike, teams can play.
Oh, wow. This happened last
time, too, right?
So what's
the contingency plan behind CPS?
Wow. Sam Panionovich, Preps Plus Chicago, coming up here on 720 WGN. All right, go Cubs. 720 WGN. This is Chicago's very own 720.
Bottom of the sixth inning.
WGNRadio.com. All right, so coming up, Preps Plus Chicago with Sam Panionovich, Mike Jacobson. Also tonight, coming up at 11 o'clock, we got the post game, True Blue, which will be hosted by Adam Hogue. Mark Carmen will be involved with that. Sam Panionovich will force him to do it as well. And coming up at midnight, that means that's Patty will be on at midnight tonight. So lots to do. We will be back on Monday.